1. We live, baby. We live. We're going to give it a couple of minutes, like a minute or two, before we really do your introductions or anything like that. So I'm going to give a brief one so you can tell that story again while we bring people in and we're notifying everybody of us being live. So go ahead. So you helped us recently. You and I, Johnny, we've known each other again for 4 to 5 years, right? And you know, you've been a huge advocate actually for Project Reef. You've seen the work we've been doing. And you know, even like with Rocco right here, he's a part of it. You know, he's experienced it. He has a whole story with us, and that's why he's so hardcore about Project Reef too. And he actually served with Carr, one of our co-founders.
Oh,
yeah. So
same unit.
Yeah. So,
That's dude, I owe you a can of dip.
Yeah. Yep. So he, when you helped us help Carr and his unit overseas, you are also helping him out. So, we really appreciate it. Tell us that story though, because that's so great.
So, one of the requests was for dip, for tobacco. Yeah. And I knew like most people aren't going to send tobacco because, you know, tobacco, blah, blah, blah. But I remember, you know, like when the smoking lamp wasn't on, I would literally put like half a can of a dip in my mouth and like swallow it because you couldn't spit it. You know, like you just got used to it. And so like they're like, hey, we want dip. I'm going to give these guys dip, man. You know, so I went to the local store here in New Jersey and the guy behind the counter is definitely not American. And I'm like, give me all your dip. I want all of it. And he's like, no, I can't sell all. And I'm like, no, give me everything you got. And he's like, no. And I'm like, listen, I'm sending this over to men that are willing to fight and die so you can work in this country. And my son's like, you better sell my dad that dip. And the guy behind us goes, sell that man what you got. okay. I sell. And he sold us all the dip and we sent it over to you guys.
I love it. And we shipped it out and they were all very grateful to receive the dip and the skull and everything else you sent too. Because it wasn't just that. You also
my wife did all the others, the toothbrushes and all the other stuff. That was all
she hooked it up.
Cynthia Walker, that's all her. She knows this from, you know, hanging around with me and my Marine Corps, you know, cohorts, what we want and need, you know.
Huge.
So she took care of all the other stuff.
The Walker family took care of the New Jersey Guard infantrymen that were shipped overseas and we cannot thank you enough for that, man. That was huge. And I just love that story, especially your son being like, you better sell my dad all that dip.
You're going to give him everything.
Yeah. I love that so much, dude.
He's only 7 years old, too.
Oh, damn. He's been dad's traits then, huh? Getting real direct.
Well, I try to raise my kids to appreciate the country that we live in, you know, right. and I don't, to be honest with you, I don't want them to join the military.
That's fair.
But I do want them to understand the sacrifices of all of our brothers and sisters and before us, you know, and I try to instill into them, you know, honor, courage, commitment to that standard that flies in front of our house. We don't just fly it because it's you know, a political thing or a fad. We fly that flag because it's what we are.
It's what we are. That's exactly right. We're Americans. That's right.
Yeah.
I love that.
I gotta get them some white bottle Listerine and send it over.
Is that to hide what's inside?
Yeah. So on a previously enjoyed deployment, somebody sent something over. It was Goldschlager in a white Listerine bottle.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was fucking awesome.
I'm going to plead the fifth on mouthwash bottles with mixes of whiskey to get past, you know, senior NCOs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, back in the day.
Plead the fifth to it. Strong plead.
Yeah. Yeah. But ironically enough, I do have stories that have mouthwash bottles that were emptied and refilled. Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right, so let's so you know, I'm gonna show you what we just saw, Johnny.
Oh,
this is from an episode last week.
Two weeks ago.
I forgot I was in South Dakota. This is this guy looks, he does look just like your brother-in-law.
He does.
And I just met his brother-in-law like yesterday, two days ago now, and looks identical to this. His brother-in-law is a really cool dude, great sense of humor. So I was able to bust his balls on that. But that's what we laughed about. So listen, I said it to you. I'm excited to have you on here. I really am, because you have an interesting story. You have a real story, one of overcoming a lot, of, you know, getting vulnerable, of being a husband, being a father, you know, being a Marine, and, you know, being through the shit, you know? So, I've always loved your story. I love the way you're able to come through and come out on top and keep your composure through things. And even when you did break down in your life, you were able to get through it and you're able to stay composed through everything. Right. And you never gave up hope. I think it was your family that really, you put that testimony towards to help you get through all that. Right.
I would say my wife and my family, yes. But mostly, I got to give credit where credit's due. I got one of these on my desk. I got one of these by my bed. I got one of these in my dining room. I got one of these in my living room. I got to give credit where credit's due, and that's God.
Amen. Okay, that's great, man. I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront. So what the purpose of this podcast, FML usually means fuck my life. In this case, it means for my life. So we're looking for you to share your story with us, and then we're going to get to the point where you really recognize that you were for your life, and how you got through it and what you're doing today, and, you know, any advice you can give to anybody that worked for you to be able to get through and get to the top. So
sure. I'll do a really fast summary of my life.
Give us the full one.
Okay. So my family, both sides are from the Deep Hills of Kentucky. Both my grandfathers are coal miners. Both my grandfathers fought in World War II. Both sides were poor. They moved up north to find work. That's where my mother and father met. My dad's family ended up very successful and wealthy. My mother's family is still poor. My dad left when I was young, so I was with my mom's family. My mom worked 2-3 jobs. I worked on a farm and a ranch to keep, you know, to pay the bills. Wasn't a good kid. I was a really bad kid. I'm not gonna lie. I got kicked out of 3 schools. I got my GED, had to get college credits to even go into the Marine Corps. Fortunately for me, I scored really high. I got the record for the GED for the state of New York. I think it still stands, my score back in 1996. So I was able to get into college and get the credits, join the Marine Corps. Unfortunately, I was in a vehicle accident, almost split me in half. I got 6 screws, 2 rods, 2 gates in my spine, and it ripped almost all my organs. And I had some aorta ruptures in some of my arteries. Technically dead twice throughout the process. I had to learn how to walk again. They put me in a reserve unit, 6th Comm Battalion, out of Brooklyn. That's how I ended up as a 9/11 first responder. Sorry, I kicked my cord. So I, at the time, was my wife. She was my girlfriend. She was at Pace University dorms, about three blocks away from the towers when they fell. I was on the ferry when the second plane hit. I lived in Staten Island at the time, and they sent the ferry back to Staten Island. So I sat there and watched the buildings collapse on top of my wife. I thought she was dead instantly.
Oh my God.
I found out before I went in with some firemen. I found out that she was alive and on her way to Brooklyn. That's all I knew. I knew she was alive, and I knew she was walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. We were ordered not to go. We were ordered actually to assist in making a makeshift morgue at the Staten Island Yankee Stadium. And, you know, I didn't obey orders. I actually put some civilian clothes on. I had my ICBs. Back then, the Marine Corps had what was called ICBs, which is infantry combat boots. They phased them out. I had my boots on. And this is the messed up part. The soles on the boots melted from the heat. And when I went back to drill, I had to get a new pair of boots, and they actually charged me for them.
Jesus. Of course they did.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so they knocked my pay for an extra pair of boots. I still have the boots up in my closet actually that I wore on 9/11.
Can we see those?
I would have to dig them out, James. If you asked me ahead of time, I would have went through, like, yep. It's in my, like, you know, I have like boxes of like gold stuff.
Cool.
I can definitely dig through and try to find, you know, send you a picture later.
Heck yeah.
So, you know, I went to 9/11. I only stayed there for the night. I'm not gonna lie. Butterbar from the National Guard heard a bunch of Marines disobeyed orders, and he was rounding us up, yanking us off the pile, and was like, "Listen, you go back. You got to call your platoon sergeant and check in, or you're gonna get it, you know, NJP." So the one regret I have is that I listened to him. I should have just stayed there. I think now reflecting back on it, you know, there was nobody alive. I think deep down inside, we knew we weren't going to get anybody out. For years, about 19 years, I couldn't even smell pork cooking, because it smelled so much like the bodies burning underneath me. Combat veterans often can relate to that smell of human flesh and pork. It smells almost the same when it cooks or when it's burning. Thankfully, I was in a documentary, which I originally said no to, about 9/11, and they ran some protocols on me, and I still get emotional, but I don't have that PTS anymore from 9/11. Like, I can tell you this story. I'm emotional about it right now. You can even hear it in my voice, but I'm not going to lose the day. You know, those emotions are now put on the right shelf in my brain. And after that experience of overcoming that, I was already on a mission. I lost a brother, veteran, to COVID, and also his own stubbornness, for not wanting to get help. He thought he could just tough it out and actually killed him. You know, after he passed away, one of the promises he made me make was to help as many veterans as I could. And, you know, so I went into it all naive, like, all right, I'm going to do what my brother asked me to do. And, I think he knew he was dying, and that's why he asked me to do it. Because when I did that, I realized, holy shit, can I curse?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Fuck yeah. You can curse.
Okay. All right. So, all right. We're going to go straight Marine Corps. I was like, holy fucking shit. I think he knew I needed the help.
That's the
right. Like, I didn't realize, like, I'm like, all right, I'm doing this for my brother. I'm going to go help a bunch of veterans. And when I got involved, I was like, I'm fucked up, man. I need some help. You know, like, I had lived in suffering for so long. I didn't realize that I wasn't really living life, you know?
Yeah.
Until I went in and started, all right, I'm going to help veterans. And I was like, shit, I'm the veteran that needs help, you know? And I had gotten, you know, I'd isolated from so many of my brothers. I had, you know, like, I was, I guess, almost like in a denial stage of PTS that I didn't realize how much, you know, how many layers of the onion. And I was just adding more layers as time went, you know, because it wasn't just 9/11. I lost my mother to a terrible disease, you know, life, everybody can relate, not just veterans, not just first responders. anybody can relate to, you know, life stacking trauma on top of trauma, right, on top of trauma, yeah, on top of, you know, like life just beats you down. It's just part of life.
Life is suffering.
It is. And, but without suffering, you wouldn't know the joys of success or pleasure, right?
Or redemption.
Redemption. And like people, a lot of times, you know, I'm it's hard for me to take a compliment, and they'll be like, oh, you're a hero. And I always reply, I'm not a hero. I'm just a man fighting for redemption every day. You know, salvation is given and I'll take it, but I prefer to stand in front of God when my time comes and say, I was on a road to redemption and I fought every day. Maybe not today. I might not fight as hard as I did yesterday. I'm not perfect. I'm going to slip. I'm a sinner. I'm going to, you know, make mistakes, but
yeah,
my heart's in the right place. And I want that last final moment when I kick the dirt, hopefully I got my fucking boots on and I stand in front. I can stand tall and know that I strive my best to, you know, redeem myself every day, because every day I made a mistake, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess what works for me is a lot of times people think that there's, I'm going to use social media right now real fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I only really do it for work at this point, just to, you know, like promote other people, like Project Refit, promote friends and my business and other businesses that are veteran or nonprofit. But outside of that, I really don't like it. And I'll go through the feed and it's like, oh, testosterone, you know, supplement. Oh, this supplement will make you think better. Oh, do this and it'll, you know, you'll find spirituality. Do, you know, if you buy, but in reality, there's no pill to take. There's no money. There's no materialistic thing that is going to make you a better person. Everything that's going to make you a better person, God has already given inside of you. You have it inside of you. And if you can just be humble enough and take the ego away and realize that, you know, you are just human. You're going to make mistakes, but God has given you the ability to stand up again and again and again and again. Knock me down 8 times. I'm going to stand up 9 times, you know? And every time, you know, we can blame God, we can blame the universe, we can blame other people, but in reality, you got to blame yourself, mm-hmm. right? And not in a harsh way, but blame yourself in a compassionate way to understand.
I was just about to say, there's no shame in accountability.
Right. Learn from it, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I screwed up. What's the lesson? Don't do it again, right? Mm-hmm. And if you do it again, smack yourself in the face, you know, because a lot of times you'll do it again because it's a habit sometimes. Sometimes you expose habits that
your thoughts are habits. Yep.
Yeah. And so what's worked, that's pretty much what works for me, and is also compassion for others. You know, like I don't get jealous. I don't try to compare myself with other people. You know, I cheer people on. If I fail, I fail. If other people fail, I have compassion. If other people are succeeding, I cheer them on. You know, it's just, we're all connected in one way or other, whether we like it or not.
You know, to your credit, that I experienced that with you, actually. And you think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So to your credit, you're not just preaching. You actually live by that. Even when you're struggling to cheer someone on, you do cheer them on. You eventually do always. Like you work your way through it and you do. I experience that with you. So I actually look at you as your example really taught me how to do it too. So it was such a eye-opening moment for me when you shared with me the things you shared with me a couple of years ago. I was like, damn, wow. Thank you for telling me that. Thank you for calling me and saying that. It really was it was like two years ago now, actually. It was like 2 years ago. And yeah. It was really such a humbling and real moment for me to respect you a lot. So you don't just preach it, you live it. So I just want everybody to know that about you, that you really do live what you say you're doing, you know? And I have a lot of respect for you for that, a ton of it.
Oh, I'm terrible. Good. I'm just a man walking a road of redemption.
Yeah.
That's I'm going back to my, you know, my real script. I'm bad at taking compliments, but you guys are doing great things, and you're helping brothers, you're helping sisters, you're helping the community, you're helping the people that are willing to serve others, which is, an honorable and noble thing to do. And I would be a hypocrite not to do everything I can to support that cause. And you're doing it out of a pure, genuine spot. You know, I have to say there are predatory, like nonprofits out there that are
100% right,
that take advantage of veterans and law enforcement. Because they know that we're, you know, a community that is in a mental health crisis situation right now. You guys aren't, you guys are actually, you show up, you're doing the right thing. I mean, I can remember it was, must've been like, I don't know, 11:45 at night one night. And you sent me a text message about a veteran who was armed and you were going to go talk to him. I was like, dude, wait, I got a bulletproof sweatshirt. Let me get it.
Yeah, that's right.
You were too far away at the time and it was, you know, the timing didn't work out. But, you know, that takes a lot of guts and that, so I respect the hell out of you guys. So the feeling's mutual and
really appreciate
you guys
that.
Are walking the walk and talking the talk. And that's
right. Out. Carr actually is the, he led from the front. He was the first guy that really did something like that. And I just followed his lead. You know what I mean? And I would do it over and over and over again. I don't care how it sounds, you know, dumb or whatever. I don't give a shit. Cause I know at the end of the day, sometimes it takes a community to be the one that helps somebody out. And that's really what I really believe, that so many veterans and first responders out there get to the point where, like, who am I serving? Why are people hate me? Right? Like, they don't like me. They don't live up to the freedom standard. What was my sacrifice for? And they feel victimized by it. Now, that's a mental health state that they need to get out of themselves, but why not help them out a little bit with being someone that is worth serving, is worth, you know, being a part of the community with, you know, and is worth sacrificing for. I think that's the part of a civilian, is to give back in that way and welcome people home. Like, I don't even say thank you for your service anymore. I stopped saying that a long time ago. I say welcome home, every single one of them. Like, yo, welcome home, dude. You know what I mean? And it's different. Throws them off. I just said it to a young guy the other day. I could see in his eyes. He's like, thanks. It's like, yeah, you're welcome. And then I walked away. like it was him saying thank you to me for welcoming him home. You know what I mean? It's like, hey man, welcome home. It's like, dude, cool. Yeah. Thank you. It's like, yeah, no problem, dude. And then
You hit the nail on the head. It's funny. I can't remember who it was, but somebody, I can't remember, but somebody was talking about, they were talking to a World War II veteran, and the World War II veteran, and they asked, how do you feel when people say thank you for your service? And I always feel weird about it when people say that. And I'm like, there's no need for thanks. It was an honor and privilege to serve, you know? And this older guy, I think he was Army 101st Airborne or something. I can't remember. I'd have to look back, but he finally started saying, when people said thank you for your service, he would say, thank you for being a good American to serve.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, when you just said that, it reminded me of that statement. And
being worth serving.
Yeah. And that's the beauty. Like, you know, we're seeing so many veteran entrepreneurs that are trying to rise up, veteran nonprofits. They're good people. And it's really a renaissance, and I'm honored to be part, or even a tiny part of that, you know, and help any way I possibly can. I would love to be able to see a lot of these efforts come together, because right now they're all disparate, all, you know, doing different things. And part of it is, unfortunately, the reason why they're disparate is because of those predatory nonprofits that have taken advantage of the situation to make money and pay CEOs $350,000 a year on the backs of donors that spent money to help veterans, right? But you have good ones out there, and but these other ones have set a game or a chessboard, have you, of competition in the nonprofit space, especially, right? Where if you look, there's a lot of veteran nonprofits that actually their true mission is the same thing, but how they accomplish that mission may be very different. And if we can find a way to bring all of them together, the magic would just be unstoppable.
That's exactly what James sits here and does. That's most of his time. Whenever there's another respectable nonprofit, he's like, yeah, give me a call. Let's work together. Let's do it. You know what I mean? Right. And I'm glad you said that too, because whenever I introduce Project Refit to somebody new, like, when I used to work the night shifts, I would stop and talk to random police on the way home, and you know, I'd bring it up. But I always say we're a true nonprofit, because there are those predatory ones out there that, you know, just want to make money and make money off the backs of people that have perished and who are hurting. So I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, and I think that you know, we're moving in that direction. And as long as there's hard chargers out there like James and you guys, and you know. I'll throw my name in that hat too.
Absolutely.
Keep on fighting for it. You know, eventually we'll get together and we'll all, you know, I mean, think about it. I'm just going to use the Marine Corps, because not because I'm a Marine, I'm just using it as an example, because we're the smallest branch, right? We're the smallest branch. We take on the majority of combat operations for all the United States. We have the lowest budget and the worst equipment. Right. And we still do it. We still get the mission done. And, you know, in the United States, there's about roughly, give or take, 1.4 million United States Marine Corps veterans. So just take the smallest branch, right, out of all of them, except for Coast Guard and Space Force. But puddle jumpers and Guardians of the Galaxy. So. no disrespect for the, you know, Space Force. You know, go find those lizard people for me.
I'm never gonna call it anything else. Thank you so much.
but my point being, like, imagine if we got all, like, that's 1.3 million Marine Corps veterans. That's bigger than any military on Earth, right there. So just the Marine Corps veterans. So, like, it's kind of like. Our protection of anybody ever invading the United States, throw in the Army veterans, throw in the Navy veterans, right? You come here, you're going to have a bunch of guys that have hung up their uniform, want to live in life of peace. If you start trouble and you make them open up that safe and lock and load, you better be ready.
Most of them are disgruntled.
We do not want to open that safe, and we do not want to lock and load. We want to be throwing the football with our kid. We want to be taking our daughter to gymnastics and watching her do crazy moves that I don't let my daughter watch this, because she tells me and I forget what they're called. Back bend twirl thing, you know, but that's what we want to be doing. We don't want to open that safe. We don't want to lock and load. But if you force us to, it's not going to be a drag, and you're going to be able to stop. You know, and the only reason why I'm saying this is because imagine if, let's just flip the script a little bit and say, let's make that, instead of it being an external threat, let's make that we have all these disparate entrepreneurs and nonprofits. What if we found a way to get together? We would be just as unstoppable as that dragon that had to open the safe and lock and load. We have the training, we have the grit, we have the determination, we have it, we have the ability. It would be magical, you know, and so hopefully one day we'll get to a point where we can find a way to get all of these veteran, you know, owned companies and veteran nonprofits and really, really make a difference. And I think it's moving in that direction.
Yeah, I... It's a big challenge, you know, And I think it comes down to the operations of such. Like, there needs to be an ultimate leader for that. So I feel like maybe it's like the local, like partner up with as many local as you can that fit and make sense. Because I really believe, like, at the end of the day, when it comes down to this, what I've learned with the nonprofit space is if you are focused and crushing it on your goal and your mission, because there's some nonprofits like the Patriot Fund, for example, they're one of my favorites out there. The Patriot Fund raises millions of dollars. Like, they raise so much money now, and then they grant funds to nonprofits. And if you're underneath of their, if they fund you, like, for example, JT, you know, he, Consequence of Habit. So he, do you know who that is? First off?
No, I'm not sure if I do.
All right. So he's a really good dude. He has this thing called Consequence of Habit. He's underneath of, the Patriot Fund. And, you know, we work together now. Like, if there's some way to get him out on a retreat, he'll do, you know, meditation, guided meditation and breathing, like Wim Hof type breathing during the retreat. I would welcome that in a heartbeat. And I told him that, you know, but really just, you have to focus in on, just like with fire teams in the military, like, you're part of like a whole platoon or company or whatever. And then you have your different individual fire teams within that executing missions. They have to, let's say they're in the middle of a firefight, right? They're in the middle of a real fucking combat. You have your one fire team all the way on the left flank, another fire team all the way on your right flank. The two are experiencing completely different types of fighting at that moment, right? Bullets are flying, but they're experiencing different enemies. So how this enemy on the left flank, goes after the one on the right flank, you know, really will determine the battle. Because if the left flank doesn't adjust to what they're seeing effectively, and the right flank doesn't adjust to what they're seeing effectively, then they're going to break through. So what that means is the mission sets change. You have to adapt to overcome, right? Overcome, adapt and overcome, or what is it that you guys say in the Marine Corps?
Yes, adapt and overcome. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah. So, like, if you don't adapt and overcome, you're going to be fucked. So yeah. What I've learned is, we all have our different individual mission sets, and we have to really focus in on doing our best in our fight. So if you can have somebody coming from the back from supply, like a JT who has a breathing apparatus, or, you know, on the battlefield, or in his case, just learning and teaching people how to breathe in the real world, right? So if he doesn't come up to my side when I ask him to, and I know somebody needs it, then that guy might die. Right. So if he needs to go over to the left flank and give that to somebody else too, that's great. Go run to them. We don't need it right now. Right. So it's really learning how to use the tools at your disposal. And then again, adapting and overcoming. So with the funds coming in from different places, I think it comes down to we have to be so focused on our mission. And if we're so focused on our mission, we actually help out others because we know we can't do what that other guy does. So it's really, I don't know if it's a bring everyone together anymore. I think it's more like just be honest and be open and just ruthlessly go after what you're going after, right? Go after your mission set, what you came up with. Like, ours is combating isolation. So we are ruthlessly attacking that every single day. We are just going after, we developed a pipeline to do that. Just like Marines, you have your recruiters at the beginning of the pipeline, all the way through to making infantrymen and or other jobs, right? So we have the outreach portion. We have we're going to put you into I call it an amoeba because it all moves with one, right? But as it goes into the body of the pipeline, you have to be able to know where to distribute people appropriately, right? So that's really what I've learned. And again, I just try to help Project Refit be the best it can be without getting weird army quote there, but I genuinely do try to do that, right? I try to just keep us focused in on our mission and get guys where we meet them where they're at, and then get them to a retreat if we can. And if not, get them to a retreat, get them to a local fire team. And then that local fire team having resources at their disposal, like, hey, one guy needs, again, to learn how to breathe. You know, we think Wim Hof breathing. Okay, great. Shuffle him over to JT. And that's where the resource lists come in. There's software that has resources on it. That's compiling all, there's like fucking 10,000 of those now. We get hit up by like six of them a day. Like, hey, we're trying to bring all the nonprofits together. We have a software that does this, that, and you know, it's like, okay, cool. We know we're on like six of them so far. Add us to yours too. It's fine. But I really do believe that the people that are doing the frontline work, like a Project Refit, have to be so ruthlessly focused on execution that everything else behind it, just like, dude, like, listen, we're talking to the guys directly. We get them directly. You know, are you going to help us or not? You know what I mean?
That's another big point. I actually wanted to say this since that was brought up, is bringing all of the nonprofits together. As an ideology, it would be wonderful, but you would lose focus on so many. So many focus, like ours is isolation, while somebody else's might be getting them service dogs, while somebody else's might be something else. And if you gather all of the nonprofits up that are for veterans and put them together, again, you said there's going to be one that's going to, you know, one person that's going to have to lead the entire thing. And then it's going to become political. And then it's going to be like, hey, sign this to where the fund's going today, or, you know, what takes precedence over what. So if you have like a faction, right, if we could do like a faction kind of thing, like nonprofits with common interests or common targets, right, that would be something that I'd be interested in. But if you got all the nonprofits together, it would be very political.
Yeah, it
would. And people are people. So somebody would benefit from it somehow. And that's
true.
It turns into a Marxist or communist centralization of power.
Yep.
And that would end up completely ruining everything.
Absolutely.
Allowing people to be free and individual is what makes this country so amazing, and something that we need to fight for ruthlessly. I think, once again, not trying to get political, and I'm not going to get political, but that's something I try to avoid every fucking day. Get your bureaucracy the absolute fuck away from me. I want to create something that is less bureaucratic and more nimble, because that's what makes Marines so fucking effective in this example, right? Like, you motherfuckers, you have your cult, you have your execution, and you have your violence. And like, that is, you guys are the one of the, if not the greatest fighting force that's ever existed. Sorry, I know Army Infantry.
It's okay.
But like, that's what makes you guys so fucking effective. You know what I mean? Like, think about it that way. Like, your fire team, your one fire team could probably take on a whole platoon of 200, you know, enemy. You know what I mean? Like, that is just the truth. Like, five Marines against fucking 200, I'll bet some money on that fucking Marine. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. You also lose the personal aspect of it.
That's exactly right.
That's what I've been trying to say. Oh,
sorry. That was weird. My screensaver came on.
You'll lose, like, if you were a corporation almost of nonprofits.
Yeah.
What we stand for the most, the thing that makes us most meaningful, is we fly fucking 10 to 15 guys out to a location, camp with them, and talk with them around a campfire. That's what makes it personal, and that's what makes it real. And you know, if you make it a corporation type thing, that all goes out the
window. They turn in the numbers.
Yeah.
Well, I was more or less saying bringing them all together, and as a fact of like where they could be, help each other, lift each other up, not necessarily one person leading, but a resource where, for example, if you, your mission focus is isolation, right? Well, you can go on a retreat. You have somebody that does, breathing, right? Well, there's others that do trauma resilience, right? Where you can find, you know, like an area. And I know a lot of people are trying to do it, and whether it happens or not, who knows? But the beauty, more of personal networking, right? Like Project Refit, I might have another nonprofit that has a different mission, but is also veteran based, that I can help you plug into and collectively work together on a retreat, for example, and share the retreat and be able to bring even more veterans together, benefit from what you're doing and benefit from what they're doing. And I think it's more, I guess I probably misspoke. It should be more of like a grassroots effort, where we can be, because you're right. One of the most famous quotes, I can't remember who it was. It was I think it was a NATO, officer from the French, was talking about how strange the Marine Corps officers were. And one of the Marine Corps officers went to the French guy, and he was like, you don't understand. Your officers are there to give orders. Our officers are there to make sure the Marines aren't too vicious against the enemy. So if the enemy kills a Marine Corps officer, you just let the leash off of those devil dogs, and they are going to destroy you. Like, there's a complete difference there, right? Like,
yes,
the officer over, you know, I'm not sure how the army runs it. It's a little bit similar to the Europeans, where it's like the officer gives out the orders and blah, blah, blah. A Marine Corps officer is just there to make sure Marines don't just totally lose it and just, you know, lead and K-bar, you know,
it's, right.
And nothing else. Like, we don't, you know, like, if you don't have that officer there to stop you, you know, I feel bad for the enemy downrange.
You know how I know that is an absolute truth was the story that, I'm not going to say his name, but the one Marine that came on the Montana retreat with us, he shared that story about his buddy that got in front of them and stopped them. Mm. That's real shit.
It's true. The Marines will.
That story, by the way, is one of the most powerful. I have never felt so genuinely, never felt so emotional towards a story in my life. I'm talking about a guy that absolutely should have a Medal of Honor for his actions, but it wouldn't be awarded to him because it wasn't actions towards the enemy. It was actions to help his brothers in that moment. And he literally, the guy that was with us was like, dude, I am forever in that man's debt. And like, it's just, I would love for you to meet this guy one day. Actually, you would like him a lot. He's a very smart guy. He's a good Marine. And this story is just unlike any other I have ever heard in my life. And it ripped my fucking soul out of my body because it was that deep. And he went deeper with me at one point too about it. And
that's what she said.
Damn. Damn. You had to do that in that moment? Shit. fucking got my ass. Got him. So
he's going to get complimentary crayons.
Oh, damn. Yeah, it was incredible. Incredible. But you're right. I can see that.
Well, yeah. So I guess my point is like, we need to, as a veteran community, as a civilian ally community, we really need to have that. I hate to just say Marine Corps mentality, but that Marine Corps mentality, screw the officers. Like, we're there for our brother and sister on our left and our right, you know? My son did an article for the school newspaper. He's asked to, and it actually got featured as the feature article of that month. And his article, he's called it 9/11 from the attack to the fight. And he interviewed me as a Marine that was there at 9/11 and Ground Zero. And then he interviewed Jake Edwards, who is 3-1 in Fallujah and Phantom Fury. And my son he's in middle school. He did his own research on 9/11. He did his own research on Phantom Fury, went on the History Channel, watched a few things about Phantom Fury. And he didn't know, one of the people featured in the History Channel documentary about Phantom Fury, his name is Sean Hanks. He was killed by, a terrorist in Fallujah, was actually Jake's best friend.
Damn.
And so during then he interviewed me and he got me teared up because he asked me, you know, what would I do different now, you know, knowing what I know now. And my answer was I would have disobeyed that stupid butter bar and stayed there, you know, and kept digging. You know, I'm not going to tell you what he asked Jake that made him tear up. That's for Jake to tell you. But he asked Jake a question about it and about Phantom Fury. And I've known Jake for quite a while now. He's a great Marine, good brother, Semper Fi Marine, not a Semper I Marine. excellent professional, and I've never seen him tear up, and I saw him tear up. And but the moral of the story, at when you read his article, it really expresses the true reason why the secret of the Marine Corps. It's not because we're psychopaths. That's not what makes us great warriors. It's not because we're angry and full of testosterone. It's not because we're, you know, these jarhead emptied ordered mass murderers. It is because of love and respect of our brother to the left and right of us and for our country. And love and respect will conquer evil and any day of the week. It doesn't matter how much drugs those terrorists pump in their systems. That's no opponent to love and respect of that brother to your left and to your right. So I'm getting emotional even thinking about it, but that's the true secret. And if we can get that secret sauce into this entire, these disparate, you know, everybody's here doing this, and get that love and respect out there, we can conquer all that evil that's out there.
You know, when he's talking, I think about Montana, and I think about how we all sat around the fire together, and we really came to the conclusion that love, in the non-hippie sense, is the answer, right?
That was the theme of Montana.
Yeah, man. Like, that was...
I love how you say in the non-hippie sense, because that's exactly what it is. It's the love and respect, right? You want to go home, but you want your brother to go home just as much as you want to go home.
Yeah, we're not talking about a utopia. We're talking about a real, actionable love.
Right.
Seriously. Like, that's... The hippie side, I believe, is more of a utopia, right?
Right. No, we're talking about this kind of love right here.
Right. Like actionable, put into practice, you know, sit there with the person in that moment that they need. And
I'm glad you did that. My ass hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to stand. And love them as deeply as you possibly can. That's really, really important. And I think that is a special goal, and I think it's a special weapon that needs to be utilized effectively here. And the only way you can do that is through truth, right? So
right. That's,
before we jumped on, actually, we were talking about a truth that we laid out or that we had to lay out to a Marine in the most recent retreat. And like sometimes a truth will send guys into a panic attack or into a place that they don't want to be because they were just told a truth, right? But it's better to have that attack around a bunch of dudes that understand you and aren't going to judge you for it. We had a guy, literally, he had a panic attack during the South Dakota retreat, and he was sitting there, and we just literally said to him, was like, we're all here for you, bro. Just go ahead and go through it, you know? Like, we're not going anywhere. And we just coached him through it and eventually got to the point where I was like, hey, and one of the other retreat leaders out there was Tanner. I was like, yo, Tanner, you know how to do box breathing? He's like, yep. I was like, great. Show him how to box breathe in this moment. We gave him 10 minutes and then we're like, do box breathing. And I had to go inside to grab coffee. And he did box breathing with them and walked them through it. And then it was funny. It was like half hour, 40 minutes later. And the Marine's sitting there with his hands on his face in his hands like this. And he goes, tell me a joke. And we're like, he's back.
Oh, I would have been perfect.
Yo, everybody went at it. I laid one of my stupid ass jokes down. I was like, all right. Two fish in a tank. One says, how do you drive this thing? And literally just shut up after that. And Tanner looked at me. He's like, damn, dude. Like, of course you come up with some blunt ass bullshit joke like that. But it was funny. Like, but then everybody else started throwing way better jokes than I did. But, you know,
we've been there for 2 hours if I started.
Oh, yeah. The monk. You're the monk. So, yeah, we, dude, it was such a wonderful, special moment. But the thing that was great was, right after that, right? The next day after that, there was light returning to that man's face, a big smile on his face. Like he went through something. He recognized what he needed to do. And then he shared with us his action plan when he was going to get back and what he was going to do when he got home. And he executed. And
that's the biggest point right there, James, is the execution. Like we can,
right?
Like I said before, like, you know, I'm going to make mistakes and I'm redemption, right? Redemption isn't given. That's why I said salvation is given, redemption is earned. And in order to earn something, just like the title of the United States Marine Corps, like you go into that recruiting office, you go to the Army and they're going to be like, we're going to give you money for college. We're going to give you this. We're going to give you that. Same with the Air Force and Navy. The Marine Corps, this is all they say. We're going to give you the opportunity to earn the title United States Marine. We're not going to guarantee that you're even going to make it through boot camp and earn that title, but we're going to give you the chance. That's all they offer, right? And it's up to you to make those sacrifices and those changes that you have to make in yourself. I was a bad kid. Like I said at the very beginning, I was a terrible kid. And, you know, I didn't follow orders. I was anti-authority, blah, blah, blah. You know, skateboarder. You know, I was rebel without a cause kind of guy. Dude, I made those changes, right? And I got my EGA. And it's that dedication to the execution of redemption, right? You can't just say, I'm going to redeem myself. I'm on redemption and not suffer, because part of redemption is suffering, right? You're going to have to do stuff you don't want to do to redeem yourself. You're going to have to face those truths, just like you said, those truths about yourself that you may not like, that are ugly, right? And learning who you really are. And, you know, like I'm 45, you know, I'm looking down the barrel of the opposite side of middle age, right? And I'll tell you right away, if you were to ask who I was last year compared to who I am today, it's a different man, you know? And that being said, it's because I have done my best to execute on those things. Now, have I executed everything? No, I even made a social media post saying, hold me accountable. I need to clean my office. It's only halfway done. And that was like 3 weeks ago. When we get off of this, I have another meeting, but guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go make a quick sandwich. And I'm going to get a little bit more of this shit done in here and square this thing away. Right. Did I follow through completely? Not yet, but I haven't given up yet. Following through, right. And that's really the key. You might not accomplish that execution right out of the gate, you know, like, and a lot of times we'll set ourselves up and be like, all right, here's what we're going to do. And this is when it's going to get done. And you're going to fight. And you're going to get to here. And then you're going to be discouraged because you didn't make it. But what what you have to give yourself credit is all that fight up to here. Maybe you didn't make it. Guess what? Dig in a little deeper and keep on fighting and you're going to make it. Right? Like success is stacked, is reached by stacking stones of failure on top of each other. Right. And as long
as you learn from them
and sacrifice. And there is, you know, balance in this world today. I'm trying not to get political, James, but I'm going to get a little political here. They've made it to the point where we started a revolution against the King of England for a 3% tax on rum, right? Today, my paycheck gets taxed. The company gets taxed for payroll. I live in New Jersey. Our property taxes are the highest in the country already, and we just got a notice that our property taxes are going up 20% and our home insurance is going up 29%. We already live in the highest tax state in the entire country, and they're still raising the property taxes. We pay more in property taxes in New Jersey than most people pay in property taxes and mortgage put together.
What's our modern day Tea Party?
I pay taxes for gas. I pay taxes to go on the turnpike. I pay taxes to ride down the parkway, right? We're taxed to the point where I forget the last statistics. It's almost like 49 to 53% of the money that you make is taxed. We went to war with a king that controlled the most powerful army on the earth at the time over 3%. And here we are living in a world where half the money we make goes to taxes. And unfortunately, the citizens that are paying these taxes rarely see the benefits to any of those taxes paid out. And so there is no, like, everybody's like, oh, you have to find, I see it all the time, the coaching. And dude, I've even, like you said, I get endless lists of like, executive coaching, blah, 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 balance, work-life balance. That's such bullshit, dude. There is no such thing as work-life balance. It's just, it is controlled chaos mm-hmm. is what it is, right? So I know I have to work 16, 17 hours a day to make my company, my dreams come true. I also know I want to be a good father and a good husband. So what does that mean? That means I have to either sacrifice sleep or I have to sacrifice time that I eat or time that I used to work out religiously. I hardly ever get a chance to work out, but I much rather be there 15 minutes early to pick up my daughter from gymnastics so I can watch her do her little routine and on the way home, talk to her about it. Right. That to me is more precious than that extra 15 pushups I could have done. So yeah. It's really like, it's no longer, we live in a society, unfortunately, that has been dictated to us that, says, oh, you have to have a balance. If you have a balance, you're going to fall behind. You're going to slip. You have to learn how to navigate a really messed up card game with the rules stacked against you and be willing to make those sacrifices. There's no way around it at this point. Like that work-life balance that's bullshit, dude. That anybody that tells you that, they're not living in America right now. And if they're living in America, they have no real motivation and they don't want to help other people around them. And they don't want to help the community.
I completely agree with you. I think that's most people, actually. When they do find balance, they are just in a state of catharsis following the corporate structure and rule, and don't recognize how damaging that is to their freedoms and to the future freedoms of
100%. And then company culture too. When I hear that buzz term, it drives me crazy. Company culture. Who is a company to tell me how I need to think? Mm-hmm. Right. As soon as you say we have a company culture, you just said you're a Marxist. You just said you're a communist.
That's funny. I actually brought up to a guy, I forget where we were, but I was like, dude, the future is corporate communism. Like, the biggest Vanguards, Black Rocks, all that shit. Like, it's all corporate communism. But what would be the modern day Tea Party for you? Because we're coming up on time. Modern day Tea Party for you. What would that look like? What are we hitting? And then when were you for your life?
All right. So modern Tea Party, what that would look like for me, and I'm going to shamelessly plug my company, is what we do. We are making advanced technologies. We have the capability to run AI models decentralized without blockchain. And we want to take those advanced technologies and give them to as many businesses, small, medium, nonprofits as we possibly can so they can compete with the big boys. Because right now I think that the big boys are running in a revolving door of just centralized hacking and nonstop data breaches. We can stop that and we can provide that to all the mom and pops in the United States. And we want to do that. And for me, that would be the ultimate tea party to see the small guy finally come up and have tools that he needs or she needs to compete with these larger companies that literally are holding all these people down. For my life, I hope that not only my efforts in the nonprofit community and the veteran community, but also my efforts and my company's goals, and mostly even beyond that is that I serve God in a manner of which that I am a good husband, a good father, a good friend to everybody that I come across, to the best of my ability. And I've learned that there are toxic people out there that you just can't help. There are people that you have to let go sometimes, and it hurts. But just because you're hurting because you had to let go doesn't mean that they're feeling those same emotions. Some people are energy drainers, they're time drainers, and you have to focus on the people that are out there fighting the good fight And so for me, it's, I hope that I am a stepping stone for all those other people out there trying to do the right thing. I guess that's kind of
living that. In your purpose.
Yeah. My purpose.
Yeah. That's what I'm interpreting. Like you're saying, for your life is living in my purpose to be a better husband, father, friend, and protecting that energy of goodness.
Right. And I don't want even to be labeled. I don't want my name on that ripple, that ripple effect, you know, of positivity. I don't want my name on it. I just want to be recycled back into the universe as a positive energy and not a negative energy when I die, and maybe God willing, I survive long enough to see grandkids, that would be my selfish request, live long enough to see my kids have kids.
That's cool. I love that. All right. So today was fantastic. John, I mean, seriously, dude, having you on here is fantastic. Your story is great. U.S. Marine entrepreneur, trying to spread a good message, trying to help out, any way that you possibly can. You prove that day in and day out. You proved it with us. You helped out one of our co-founders deployed right now overseas, him and his unit. That's just one small example. There's many others too, but again, dude, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Everybody, every Thursday, we try to be here, or almost every Thursday. Sometimes we're hosting retreats and we can't be there on a Thursday to host For My Life or FML. So if you come through, spread the good word about this. We will be posting these soon because we're almost at, I think, 10 episodes now since restarting this whole thing. So we're going to have Spotify. Yeah, we're going to start putting our stuff up on Spotify and other places, and we're going to keep on going down this. And it's Rocco, it's James. With For My Life, a Project Refit. And if you ever want to be a part of this or, help us out, you can join the fight by becoming a monthly donor. You can join the fight by improving yourself, coming on a retreat with us. And you can join the fight by starting a fire team in your area. So reach out, talk to us, and we cannot thank you all enough. Much love to the whole community. You guys have been fantastic. We've been growing like crazy, and it's because of you. It's because of the efforts you guys put in to be better and by not killing yourselves. That's another big thing too. So we haven't lost one person yet that's a part of Project Refit officially. And we plan on keeping that going forward. So keep on fighting. Your purpose is there. You do have a purpose to be here on earth. And if you're struggling with that, we want to make sure that your light doesn't go out. So hit us up. All right. I'll talk to you all later. Thank you so much, Johnny, again. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.